Hello and welcome to the Lurton College Geography Department podcast for the AS1 exam in January 2009. The aim of this podcast is to give you an overview of the entire paper for an AS1 exam and help you get a feel for it. It's also to give you a reminder of certain important exam tips just prior to doing the exam. And I'll also give you some examples of model answers to some of the specific questions that arise. So you need to make sure that you've got a copy of AS1 from January 2009 sitting in front of you. Get your pen handy to write down any important tips. And here we go. So we start with Section A. Section A, as you know, is about our particular fieldwork, our study of plant succession in Port Stewart Strand. So question 1A says this. It begins with a quotation. Representative data collection generally requires a consideration of both sampling method and sampling size. Discuss this statement with reference to your fieldwork. Now the first thing to note with this is the very first question. It's worth 6 marks. Now sometimes it's nice when you start an exam to get a short question that kind of eases you in gently. You feel comfortable with it. Not so with this one. It's 6 marks and it's easy to feel a bit daunted by this. Don't, however, because once you start to analyse the question, break it down, it's very, very approachable, it's very doable. Let's start, first of all, by having a look at the command phrase. The command phrase, of course, you should be circling, and in this case, it's discuss. It's discussing a statement, and the statement is about representative data collection, and requires 2 things. Your sampling method and your sampling size. So whenever you realise there's 2 things, 6 marks divided by 2, it becomes 3 marks each, and all of a sudden I think this feels a lot more doable, that you're only to write 3 marks worth in each of these. So what about this command phrase discuss? Well, it requires you to go into a little bit of detail and to show some kind of understanding. It's a deeper level question than just describe or state. 2 aspects, as we say, so let's start with the first one. What is your sampling method? Of course, the technique that we used here was systematic sampling. Why did we use that? Because there was an obvious environmental gradient. There was this continuum. And systematic sampling ensures even coverage so that all soil stages will be sampled. And so the gradual changes that we expect to see as we go through the sand dunes will be observed. We're not going to miss anything out. That's why we need to do it. And that's how we ensure a representative data collection. Secondly, your sample size. Now, as you know, we sampled 15 points. Now, why did we think that was representative? Well, we thought, first of all, that it would be large enough to allow for RS, for some statistical analysis. But also, we thought it would be large enough to cover the range of soil stages. We're going to be starting at the front with the embryo dunes, and we're going to get a sense as we move back through of the gradual change. So we're going to be able to observe enough of what's going on in these gradual changes with the 15 points that we were sampling. So that's the kind of answer for that one. We break it down and we feel a little bit more comfortable, I hope, with answering that question. Over the page, and you come to part B. Again, we start with the command phrases. You should be circling them, making sure you know exactly what the question's asking you to do. In this case, it's describe one primary data collection method using your fieldwork and comment on its usefulness. So describe one method and comment on its usefulness, giving us reliable data. So 4 marks. Again, we break that down into 2. So 2 marks each. What was the method that we used? Well, of course, it was the subdivided quadrat. How did we use it? Well, it's 0.5 by 0.5 meters, broken down into 100 squares. And as you know, you laid it down on the vegetation. It defined an area for us to study, but also it allowed us to estimate the percentage vegetation. So that brings us then on to its usefulness. The main benefit of it is that with each square representing 1%, it is easy to estimate the overall percentage. However, as you know, it also has this tendency to flatten tall vegetation, which perhaps could obscure some of the smaller plants underneath, or the lower plants, and also maybe leads us to overestimate the amount of taller plants that are there. So it's useful, but we need to use it with care. And there we go, we've picked up our 4 points. That brings us on then to part C. Again, we start with the command phrases. Select one of the factors shown in resource 1 and outline its precise purpose and usefulness within your fieldwork investigation. Again, we notice with this one, select, that's a low level command phrase, so we just basically need to pick one. The bulk, therefore, of this question is in the second half, outlining. Now, notice some of the other words that appear. It's precise, first of all, so we need detail in this. And we're looking at 2 things, its purpose and its usefulness. And notice again, it's in the context of your fieldwork investigation, so we need specific details about what we did. Well, we won't need to pick one, but I'm going to, for sake of illustration, go over a couple of them that we used. You could do either one of these in the exam. The first one is the internet websites, and the one that we used, of course, was Google Earth, which in actual fact is a type of GIS, Geographic Information System. What about the purpose? Well, we used it for two purposes. The suitability of the location, first of all. We wanted to see that we could get access onto the dunes, and we could, down the access road. We wanted to know that we could get into the dunes, and we noticed that the vast majority of them were under National Trust ownership. And also, of course, being a geography project, we wanted to ensure that plant succession was actually taking place here. And zooming in with Google Earth, we were able to clearly identify that there were plants growing, that this was a sand dune ecosystem, and there was clear succession. We also used it to help us to determine the location of the transects. As you know, buckthorn invasion is a big problem in Portshire Strand. It is a dense plant, and there's just no easy way the geographers are going to find to get through that on their little field trip. So we needed to try and avoid that as much as possible, and we used Google Earth to locate somewhere for our transects that would tend to avoid the worst bits of buckthorn. Now, that's its purpose. What about its usefulness? Well, on the positive side, it very much allowed us to check out the suitability of the location. When it came to the transects, however, it was another story. If you remember, we sometimes can have problems with some groups hitting some of the buckthorn. The reason for that is that it's a very, very fast-growing plant, and perhaps some of the photographs used in Google Earth are a little bit out of date, so that allows us to comment on its usefulness. Now, that would be fine, that would finish the question, but maybe you decided to do something else. What if you picked statistical analysis? In our fieldwork, it was a Spearman's Rank. Make sure you mention that. This is our fieldwork investigation. Again, the purpose? Spearman's Rank allows us to assess the strength and the direction, that's positive or negative, of the correlation. And its usefulness? Well, it was very useful, because it allows us to test our hypothesis, and indeed in our case, to accept our hypothesis and clearly state that there is a correlation between distance from the front of the dunes and percentage vegetation cover. Now that enables us to fulfill our aim. So we go over the page and we're into question D. Now we notice graph paper here. In your AS1 exam, you're likely to be asked either to plot your graph or to calculate your Spearman's Rank. This is an example of the graph. Notice again the command phrases. Select an appropriate technique and present your data. Now, in this case, I'm going to go through what the mark scheme says. And 7 marks are broken down like this. 1 mark for your title. What is it and what's it show? It's a line graph showing the percentage vegetation cover with distance from the front of the sea. 2 marks for basic conventions like labelling your axes and make sure you put distance along the bottom. 3 marks for the accuracy of the plotting, in other words, you've got your points from your table in the right place. And 1 mark for the suitability of the method. Now, these are easy marks, and you can practice drawing this graph as much as you like before you go into the exam. D part 2 asks you to describe your graph, this is your command phrase, in relation to your aim. We need to make the connection. So how do we do this? Only 3 marks, so we don't need a huge amount of detail, but your answer must contain the following. The description of the general trend can be broken down into 2 aspects. First of all, you have got initially a very rapid increase in percentage vegetation cover. And then secondly, and subsequently, it levels off at a high level. So that's your general trend. The next thing you have to deal with are any anomalies or natural variation that you might find within it. Of course, this is a question that requires you to look at a graph. So, when do you quote figures? And what do you always quote? Come on, let me hear you say it. Yes, I know you know it. But the other part of this question is in relation to the aim of your fieldwork. So how do we link it to the aim? Well, if you remember, the graph helps us to examine the hypothesis, in contrast to Spearman's Rank, which allows us to prove or disprove the hypothesis. The graph allows us to examine it and say that the hypothesis is true to a large extent. To that extent, it allows us, therefore, to fulfill our aim. Now, to get the 3 marks, you need to make that connection back to the aim. Part 3. Explain what your graph shows with reference to relevant geographical theory. Now, just before we answer that, remember your explanations. The questions tend to either ask it in the context of the theory or relate it back to the aim. Make sure that you notice which one it is so that you can write a relevant answer. In this case, it's the theory. And our theory, of course, is plant succession, especially focusing in on soil modification. It goes like this. The plants that begin to colonize begin to improve the soil conditions, and that in turn creates conditions to support more and a wider range of plants. Now you've got plants such as moss and the various rosette plants like dandelions, and therefore as a result of that there is an increasing amount of ground that is covered. Now that links it back to your specific hypothesis that you're testing. Now you can from the table get access to the plants, name them, and you can also get access to some of the details on the soil conditions that you find then. So make use of the table in order to fill this out and make this relevant to your fieldwork experience. We must in all cases link it back to the specifics of what we've done. And that brings us to the end of section A. So, as we move into section B, the first thing we notice here is that we're to answer all three questions. No question choice yet in this one. And these questions will come in the order of rivers, ecosystems, and atmosphere. So question two about rivers, 2A, part one. Let's look at the command phrases. In the box below, draw and annotate a diagram to show the formation of a waterfall. Now, we notice this is only worth 4 marks, so we're not going to spend a lot of time on this. Certainly no 3D diagrams are required here. A nice little simple 2D cross-section of a waterfall will be more than enough. Notice, however, it's not just draw, it's also annotate. Remember the advice I've given you in class on this, that annotation should show understanding of the processes rather than just labelling the features. So, in this, the processes in particular that you'd want to show some understanding of, as well as the features, are as follows. The plunge pool, which forms at the bottom of the waterfall, and you'd want to annotate in there the erosional features, again getting specific with your terminology, corrosion and hydraulic action. And then the notch, which is undercutting the harder rock. If you draw that and annotate those on, that's more than enough to get you the 4 marks. Part 2 asks us to explain what happens to the position of this feature over time. The undercutting, which is associated with the notch, results in the overhanging rock collapsing under its own mass. As a result of this, it retreats upstream and leaves behind a gorge. So only 2 marks, that's all you need to say. That moves us on then to question 2, part B. This is a stimulus question. So the blurb at the front, at the start of it, gives us some important information. It's also always worthwhile taking a little look through this. I know under the pressure of the time conditions in the exam, you maybe want to rush on through, but this contains some important information. It says that Resource 2 shows storm hydrographs for 2 neighbouring streams over a 3-day period. Drainage Basin A is agricultural land with fruit trees, and B, 40% urbanised. Now, what this is asking us about is the factors that affect the storm hydrograph. Notice what is ruled out here. First of all, they're neighbouring streams, so we can assume that the rainfall is very similar within them. Notice also in the key for the resource material itself, the area is more or less the same. So size is ruled out. What's ruled in? It's land use. You have got an urban area and an area with trees. So let's take a look at the question underneath. Command phrase, describe and explain, our old friends, what and why. Notice next that it's to describe and explain the effects. Now it's worth noting this within the questions that come up in the exam. There are 2 types of word groups that can be used whenever we're dealing with things like this. You have the effects words, other words that mean the same kinds of things or consequences or impacts. The other type of words are causes. So it's worth noting here in any question if you're getting effects or causes kinds of words, because you want to make sure that you're writing about the one that's actually raised in the question. Notice also that you've got to use information from Resource 2. At the very least, that's going to mean that you're going to be quoting figures. When do you quote figures? What do you always quote? So, whenever we're approaching this and trying to see what the patterns are in it, it's very often a good idea to quickly access the theory from our notes. You should know from what you studied on urbanization, that it tends to produce storm hydrographs with shorter lag times and higher peak discharges. And if we look at the graph, that's exactly what we see. The black line for drainage basin B, which is the urbanized area, you can notice that it rises quite quickly after the storm starts at hours 12. The peak discharge is higher and it's also faster. It takes the other drainage basin a lot longer to begin to respond, and whenever it does respond, the discharge doesn't go up anywhere near as high as it does in drainage basin A. Those are the differences. Make sure that you outline them and make sure that you quote figures. What about the explanation for it? Well, it goes like this. The urbanized area has two features which will produce this short lag time and high peak discharge. First of all, there's lots of impermeable surfaces, so you're going to get overland flow taking place there. And secondly, you've got drains and sewage systems which are designed to get the water away from the urbanized area and to the river as quickly as possible. The forest, in contrast, has the trees which will increase interception, that will slow down the time it takes them to reach the river. And of course there will be also infiltration, through flow and so forth, which are slower processes than overland flow. All in all, producing a longer lag time. Also, the trees will take up some of the water and they will access that themselves, so that will produce the lower peak discharges as well. So those are the differences. Describe and explain for 6 marks. Over the page, we then get into question 3, which is the ecosystems question. Part A says this. In an ecosystem, describe how nutrients are cycled between the store, litter and biomass. Describe here. So we're not looking for a huge amount of detail in it. It's only 4 marks in this. And if you access in your mind your nutrient cycling diagram, you'll remember there are 3 stores, which are actually mentioned even in the question. From biomass to litter, as the leaves fall out of the trees, they go the fallout pathway. Then from the litter, as it lies on the surface of the soil, the decomposers do their work. So that it leads to them becoming decomposed. And that's our decay pathway from the litter into the soil. And from the soil into the biomass, the roots of the trees take up the nutrients. So we call that the uptake pathway. It is important to remember to quote terms. You will be assessed on quality of written communication in this exam, which it at the very least means you should use suitable geographical terminology as much as you can. Part B. Describe the effects of leaching and capillary action on the soil profile of mullee soils in mid-latitude grasslands. The command phrase here is describe. 4 marks, broken down into 2 parts, leaching and capillary action. So again, we're not looking for a huge amount of detail in marks. Now remember, in the previous question, I encourage you to take a look for some other important words, the effects words here, the consequences, the impacts. Look to see whether there's that or the other group of words, which is the causes. Again, in this case, it's the effects, not the causes. So let's take a look at the content. Leaching, as you know, is the downward movement of water, bringing with it soluble nutrients, and the effects of that process are just to simply leave the upper layers of the soil with less nutrients in them than before leaching took place. In contrast, capillary action is the upward movement of water, and again it brings with it dissolved nutrients. The effects of this is to draw the nutrients upwards. Specifically, it tends to carry some nodules of calcium carbonate into the upper sea horizon, giving us the CCA horizon. 4 marks, and that's all you need for those. Part C is a stimulus question again. Study resource 3, which shows grass height and annual rainfall in an area of mid-latitude grasslands. Now you've got the area, you've got the cross-section showing the length of graph, and you've got a little graph showing you the various precipitation. Let's take a look at the question underneath. Using resource 3, describe the relationship between grass height and annual rainfall. We're circling the command phrase, describe. And we notice there's only 1 mark here, so we don't need a lot of detail, but we do notice that we need to use resource 3, which means, of course, that we need to quote some of those figures. And if you take a look at it, it's very, very straightforward for you. Not only have they got the grass height increasing in terms of figures, but they've actually very helpfully drawn the lines a little bit longer just to make it really, really obvious. And if you look at the bars above, it's very straightforward. As precipitation increases, the length of grass increases as well. An easy mark to pick up. Now that brings us then to part D, which says this: explain why grasses are the dominant plant species or climatic climax vegetation in areas of mid-latitude grassland. The command phrase here again is explain. You need to show an understanding in your answer in this question. Why is grass the dominant species? Now an important clue is given in brackets: climatic climax vegetation. As you know, that is the vegetation that's in balance with the environment, especially the climate. That means that in this case, the climate here must not be suitable for anything later than grass. It's the final cereal stage that can be supported. Why is this? Because precipitation in this ecosystem only slightly exceeds evapotranspiration. That means that there's not enough water for trees to be supported. Also, during the winter, whenever the water is frozen, the trees can't get access to it. Grasses, being smaller in size, are able to withstand those conditions better and therefore are the dominant plant species. Finally, in section A, we come to question 4, which is your atmosphere question. Part A says this: explain one of the various causes of precipitation. Notice the command phrase here, explain. Again, you've got to show understanding. But this time, it's not the consequences or impacts we're grouped, but the causes. Now there are 3 to choose from, you pick one. The 3 that we have studied are convectional uplift, frontal uplift, and orographic uplift. Convectional uplift is air rising that has been warmed, so the warmer because it's less dense rises. Frontal uplift is where warmer air masses meet colder air masses and rise over them at the fronts. And orographic uplift is where the air is forced to rise over a physical barrier such as a mountain. Now once you've started with each of those, the explanation from there on in is the same for each of them. You've got air rising. As air rises, it cools. Cold air can't hold as much water vapour. Eventually, it becomes saturated, leading to the process of condensation, formation of clouds, and the possibility of rain. 3 straightforward marks. Part B, again, is a stimulus question. Study resource 4, which shows the average annual amount of incoming solar radiation received at the Earth's surface. Now, the blurb again gives us some indication of what's being shown here. Now, notice we have not actually looked at this this map in our notes. We've not done this before. Now, you need to be aware that they may well be able to present information that we have studied, but in a slightly different way, in a format that we have not specifically looked at before. You've got to take what you do know, apply it to what is unseen, and apply your understanding in order to help you to understand what's going on here. Let's take a look at the question. Describe, first of all, and explain later are the 2 command phrases here. Describe what? Describe the pattern shown in resource 4. Now, that pattern word, of course, should ring some alarm bells for you for the phrase that we kept repeating in atmosphere. The overall pattern generally holds, but some modifications are apparent. So what is the overall pattern? Well, the theory would suggest this. We looked at the relationship between temperature and latitude. As latitude increases, temperature decreases. Now, the map backs this up. As you take a look at it, very carefully, you can see that, generally speaking, as latitude increases, the amount of solar radiation received decreases. Now, of course, you need to quote some figures to back this up. What about the modifications? Well, it's not a completely straightforward pattern. In fact, the highest level of received incoming radiation is not at the equator, but it's just slightly north and south of it. If you look in South America, it's over the Amazon Basin, slightly further south from that actually. And if you look over Africa, it's north to the Sahara Desert and south to the Kalahari Desert, and then also over Northern Australia. So that's your overall pattern and your modifications, quoting some figures. Now, notice carefully the second half of this question. It's not to explain that pattern, but it says this: explain one method of heat transfer which operates to maintain the global energy balance. Right, now this should ring some other bells about atmosphere. Heat transfer occurs because there is imbalance. Oh, come on. No, it's not pantomime season, but surely you can do better than that. Imbalance. So how does the atmosphere act to redress that heat imbalance? There's 2 means. You have just to explain one. Ocean currents. If you were explaining that, you would probably want to refer to the North Atlantic Drift, bringing the warmer air towards Europe, and the Labrador Current, which brings the colder air or the colder water down past Newfoundland and Canada. You might want to make reference to the fact that the North Atlantic Drift keeps Northwest Europe warmer than many other places at a similar latitude. If you pick the winds, you want to maybe talk about the general circulation, probably also hurricanes. As you know, hurricanes start life over North Africa. They head towards America, and then very often they can hook back around in the mid-latitudes and head towards us. Now, that's a roundabout route, but it gets the energy away from the equator and towards the poles. Now, you may remember in class I told you the story of my brother, who works for an American company, who was in eastern USA when the remains of a hurricane, a tropical storm by the time it hit him, came overhead. He was battered by it. It went on, came into the mid-latitude westerlies, headed towards us. Meanwhile, he got in an airplane, flew over the Atlantic, landed down, only to be hit a couple of days later by the same storm as a very, very intense mid-latitude depression as it passed over the British Isles. A very graphic illustration of just that transfer of energy from the equator towards the poles. Finally, part C. The command phrase here is evaluate, is to weigh up, is to assess, to comment on the strengths and weaknesses of the effectiveness of one protective measure used to reduce loss of life or damage to property in areas that experience hurricanes. You've got to come up with an analysis of just the extent to which this is something that is of use. Things like forecasting would be a very good thing to address there. Now, notice that we covered this within our case study. There's no case study requirement in this question, but feel free to refer to your case study if you want to. If it's easier for you to contextualize it within that, that's fine. 3 marks for that, commenting on the pros and cons, the effectiveness and limitations of the measure that you choose. And that brings us to the end of Section B. So the final section of your AS1 exam is Section C. This is your extended writing section. Now, very often this will include your case studies, but do be aware that this may ask you about non-case study material as well. What binds us all together is that this is the essay section in this one. It's also the first time that you have to make a choice of questions. You've got to do 2 from the 3. So the first thing that you need to do when you come to Section C is to take a look through and get a feel for the questions so that you can decide which ones you're going to tackle. Let's have a look at them together. Question number 5 gives you a quotation. The beneficial effects of flooding usually outweigh the detrimental or negative effects, and the command phrase is discuss. Now, discuss, as you know, is a deeper level question, and any time that it's tied up with a quotation like this, it's inviting you to examine both sides of it, not just simply to agree with one or the other, but to examine it. Do the benefits outweigh the negative aspects of flooding? Discuss this statement with reference to large-scale drainage basin or delta you have studied. This, of course, is the Mississippi. And this is a relatively straightforward question. You should have no problems with this if you choose to do it. Question 6. Describe the physical characteristics of a small-scale ecosystem that you have studied, and discuss how energy moves through the ecosystem. Now, this is Coney Island. The reason why you know that is because the other small-scale ecosystem is Port Shear Strand, and it would be plant succession. You don't see that word appearing here. Describe the physical characteristics, that's the abiotic ones, the climate and the soil, and discuss how energy moves. That's the food web in this one. Again, this is a relatively straightforward question. Finally, question 7, with the aid of a diagram. Describe the structure of mid-latitude frontal depression, and explain the weather it produces, and discuss its impact on people. Now, there's 3 command phrases here. Describe, structure, explain the weather, discuss the impacts. Now, each one of these is relatively straightforward, but that's quite a lot to tackle in a single question. Now, you can describe the structure with the aid of diagram, a cross-sectional diagram drawn quite quickly, annotating on the air masses, the clouds, wind speed, precipitation. But you also need to explain this and discuss the impact on it. Now, if I was doing this Section C, I would have a go at question 5 and 6, simply because question 7 is long. Now, question 5, let's take a quick look back at that one just to remind you. The statement is the beneficial effects of flooding usually outweigh the detrimental effects. Now, how do you argue this? Well, what are the benefits? Remember the key word with this. The benefits are mostly historical. In the past, the flooding has deposited lots of fertile soil, which created the conditions that supported large-scale immigration, agriculture, and the settlements that grew resulting from those people moving in. If there are any benefits today, you're going to be focusing more on the environmental benefits, the water reaching the wetlands and so forth. However, largely today, the effects are negative. The flooding, when it does take place, isn't something that brings benefits to the urban areas. Remember the video we watched? Remember Funny Facial Hair Guy and his house? You ain't going to convince him that flooding is a good thing. So, talk about the negative effects today in the context of the flood event that we're studying. Question 6, the only other thing that I want to say here is to make sure that you're referring to a specific place, Coney Island. Make sure you get a feel for that. This isn't a general case, general question on this. This is talking about a specific place. So, for example, as well as mentioning the plants and animals specifically that you find there, remember that Coney Island is a small island. There are no large mammals here because the population sizes are not big enough to support them. That shows good grasp of a specific place. Now, if you were to tackle question 7, as I have already mentioned the diagram, what you would include in that. Explaining the weather, you've got a page in your notes on that, which you would include. And the impacts, well, they're going to be mostly negative, but the mark scheme says good candidates will. Good candidates. There's this category called good candidates, and I guess you probably want to fit into that. If you do, good candidates will what? Well, they will mention some of the positive impacts, the reservoir infilling. Remember also with Section C, again, just to recap, if there are case studies, we need details, we need facts, we need place names, we need a sense of a specific place. Remember also your quality of written communication, your introduction, which is short, using the wording of the question. The signpost phrases at the start of your paragraphs, the signpost phrases built in. Remember that sense of progression as you're going through. And remember also the timing. Be careful at this point. If you've been good with your timing so far, you'll give yourself the time you need for this one. But keep an eye on your watches. Make sure that you pace yourself carefully to give both questions the time that they deserve.